group of passionate bartenders from all over the United States are in the process of establishing the world's first museum devoted exclusively to the history of mixed drinks. And we don't mean Tang. The Museum of the American Cocktail is currently occupying space inside the Pharmacy Museum in New Orleans. It traces the American cocktail through its landmark time periods, the early 19th century, Prohibition, the cocktail heyday of the 1930s, up to its revival in the 1990s. Dale DeGroff is the head of the project and joins us from New York. Mr. DeGroff, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you very much for inviting me. I'm delighted.
What is the social significance of the cocktail that persuaded you needed to establish a museum?
The cocktail is an American invention, of course, just like jazz, apple pie, baseball, musical comedy, and it's very deeply ingrained in our culture and in our celebrations, in our pop culture. Every aspect of American life is drenched in sort of some history of the cocktail.
And why are you headquartering the museum in New Orleans rather than on the mall in the nation's capital,
well,
you know, right next to the Smithsonian or something?
New Orleans was really the home of genteel drinking all through the 18th and 19th century, and a lot of great, great cocktails were invented in New Orleans. New Orleans did something interesting. They called their bars coffee shops in the 19th century, and women were allowed to partake right along with men. So New Orleans was a different town. It was an international town.
I mean, are there social movements you can trace, at least in small part, through the cocktail? One inevitably thinks of women's rights, for example.
Cocktail, to tell you the truth. We are a country because of the cocktail, to tell you the truth. I think it was those...
Now you're going to have a hard time convincing some people of this. Yeah.
Let's think back to the days when the prime industry in colonial New England was rum. There were about 48 to 52 rum distilleries between Medford, Massachusetts, and Providence, Rhode Island, and we're making lots of money on that. And that's why the English got angry at us and started in 1733 with the Molasses Act, followed by the Sugar Act, followed by the Stamp Act, in order to share in the revenue that we were getting from our vigorous rum industry. It was indeed tea they threw into the harbor, not coffee, not rum, because we didn't drink tea.
Slavery certainly can be reflected through the history of the cocktail, can't it?
Yeah, I think it's a fascinating history, and it just goes on and on and on. I mean, we all know that Prohibition was a mistake, but we also know that leading up to Prohibition, there were terrible things being done in the alcoholic beverage industry that made Prohibition necessary, in a sense.
I approached it skeptically, but you persuaded me in just a few sentences.
Okay.
So you're not just going to be having a lot of silver cocktail shakers, are you, in this museum?
No, we have lots of stuff already, and even though the exhibit is very small in its current form, we really want to resuscitate this wonderful profession of bartending, which was so badly damaged during Prohibition and never really recovered. And I think people have gotten to the point now where they say, I don't want a whiskey sour that's made with some kind of artificial ingredient that comes out of a gun.
Well, what are some cocktails through history, the kind of thing that
people... Well, I mean, everybody makes the mistake of thinking that cocktails were invented during Prohibition, which is actually... totally false. Cocktails were really well in place by then. The golden age of the cocktail was really 1880 to 1912. And I say the golden age because in that middle of the 19th century is when we got the martini, the Manhattan, the fizz, the sour, the julep.
Shaken, not stirred?
Some of our... Well, I have definite theories about when to shake and when to stir. I'm a great believer in shaking drinks that have fruit juices and sweet ingredients in them so that they will have thousands and thousands of little bubbles and be effervescent and laughing at you when you pour them out into the cocktail glass. And I am a great believer in stirring drinks that have only spirits in them, like Manhattans and martinis, because I want that texture to remain heavy, silky, and cold without the little air bubbles in it. Because when I take my first sip of a Manhattan or a martini, I don't want froth. I want heavy, cold, silky. So it's about texture. And people say, can you bruise gin? And I said, in a way, you can. You can bruise it by changing the texture of it on your tongue.
Mr. DeGroff, you're in education, sir. Thanks very much for speaking with us.
Thank you very much.
Dale DeGroff, who was one of the founders of the American Cocktail Museum in New Orleans, worked for 27 years as a bartender, 12 at the Rainbow Room in New York City. And by the way, Mr. DeGroff created his own drink for the opening of the museum. It's called the Angelita. You can get the recipe and hear an extended version of our conversation on our website, npr.org. Here's Looking at You from Weekend Edition from NPR News.